Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. If you have coworkers or friends who've been bleary-eyed today, it might be thanks to a late night at the movie theater. The 8th chapter of the Star Wars saga came out last night. The Last Jedi picks up where last year's The Force Awakens left off. You might recall that film ended with an intriguing staring contest between Rey and Luke Skywalker.
Well, the new film features plenty of old favorites, including Carrie Fisher, who reprised her role as Princess Leia before her death. Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski chats with film critic and UW Milwaukee film instructor Dwayne Dudek about how the newest Star Wars installment lives up to what's come before.
Dwayne Dudek, welcome back to Lake Effect. It's good to have you.
It's good to be here.
So, Star Wars, The Last Jedi comes out today.
You just love me for my Star Wars
knowledge. I do. I want you to tell me everything, but at the same time, don't spoil anything.
Yeah, that's the trouble. The film is, if you say anything, it's story-based, so anything you say about story is a spoiler, and it's character-driven, so anything you say about the characters and the relationships is a spoiler, so you have to sort of talk around it, but I'm sure we'll touch on a few nerves that people will wish they didn't know, but I'm not in the business of spoilers. We can talk around everything, but some of the things are so specific and dramatic that they affect what you say about the film.
Yeah. Well, I suppose we'll just caution people right now that if you want to remain completely, any hint of anything spoiler-free,
and I'll do my
just
best
don't
to
listen.
Avoid it.
You know, if you're, I do know some diehards out there that are avoiding every single thing possible.
Yeah, I'm sorry that I have to put you through this.
It's okay. I've come to terms with it. So far, I mean, we had the premiere of The Last Jedi earlier in the week, and the response has been very positive. And kind of the theme that I've noticed over people's general tweets or reviews is that, you know, a line that Luke Skywalker says in the trailer, "This is not going to go the way you think." Is that accurate?
It's true. It's full of surprises, which is why it's hard to talk about. The role of Luke is really complicated. He's a reluctant Jedi now. He kind of rejects Jedi culture, and he won't interact with Rey in the way that she, because we saw her on the last scene of the last film. There's sort of three stories in this. This is, one is Rey's relationship with Luke. One is Rey's relationship with Kylo Ren. And then, you know, we do see a lot of Carrie Fisher in this.
And that's, the larger resistant move.
Yeah, it's part of, and it's so heartening and lovely to see her in there. That, and the film is dedicated to her in a kind of formal way. But the fact that they've incorporated her emotionally in the story, she's sort of the heart of the story. It's they couldn't have made this without her. There is, I can't talk about a certain scene that really, there's a couple encounters between characters that we love that are touching. And there's a lot of bittersweet stuff in this film, especially in knowing Carrie Fisher's past.
Yeah.
Will you be an emotional wreck? I didn't tear up. You know, I have to say that the first film I found much more entertaining and enjoyable because there was so much unknown. In this one, I don't know. It's not just another movie. It's part of this really beloved and enduring franchise. But, you know, I don't feel the same anticipation for it that I did for the first film. I really enjoyed it, however, and I'm super positive about it.
Well, I think a lot of people have the same feeling as you do, like even myself, because we know there's going to be a Star Wars movie every year. And
for the rest of our lives.
Yes, yeah, still we die.
You'll see more than I do.
So, you know, when The Force Awakens came out, it was, you know, it was the return of this big thing. And not that this isn't just as exciting, but from what I can speculate, you know, I've personally only watched the trailers. I haven't sought out any additional information. But it seems like a good action-packed addition, you know, and kind of maybe a little more gray area, and that Rogue One was a little darker and a little more action-packed. Does this kind of go along the same lines in that it's not so, you know, gleamy storyline as,
yeah,
you know,
gritty area,
movies?
You mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting about it is there, I mean, to a degree, so the story credit is by Rian Johnson, and Lucas gets a you know, mention because he created all this. So what they're basically doing is they're inventing, I think, the next chapters of this story that haven't been told, and they must have a future, you know, already plotted out. So it's not something that's rooted in the originals. This, to say that, though, this film reminded me a lot of the second Empire Strikes Back, for a lot of reasons. There's some old tech and just some scenes that remind you of those, of that film. There's a character that reminded me of Lando Calrissian, but he's a little worse. I mean, there's so much to talk about. I could go off on a million tangents. I hate to say it.
Right. Well, along the lines of Rian Johnson, he wrote it, but he's also the director. And Disney already gave him approval for his separate trilogy. So I imagine this shows.
Trilogy. I did not
yeah.
know.
So I imagine this shows a great amount of faith that the production companies have in Rian Johnson. So is he the director we were looking for?
Well, this is a very action-driven film. I don't think of him as that kind of director. I don't think of him much as a director. I mean, he did Looper. So, you know, he doesn't have a big resume for us to fall back on, or at least not for me. I had no impression of him as a director. And here, I'm going to say that it's a little anonymous, but there are so many, but the story is so strong and the film itself is so mythic that we accept what he's showing us. And there is a lot of, well, first of all, there's a lot of battle scenes. The film is basically one extended confrontation for over a period of time. We're not sure how all the events happen within that time frame. And during that time frame, there's like four or five massive battles as this the First Order. What do they call the First Order?
First Order, yeah.
Are mm-hmm. pursuing the resistance led by Leia. And the Leia and her troops, are she's losing people. She's losing resources. And when they do win something, like when the fighter pilot Poe, what's his name?
Poe Dameron.
By, you know this is weird. But played by Oscar Isaac. You know, goes off on some mission and scores some victory, but they're always Pyrrhic victories, and mm-hmm. the ending is sort of leads them to a chasm.
Well, you mentioned Poe Dameron, and he is, of course, established as a new character in the previous film, but we also have some other new characters being introduced in this one, or perhaps just even more of a glance into. So we know that Supreme Leader Snoke exists. We have Colonel Hux. But now we also have DJ, I believe, is the name of the thief, played by...
Oh, yeah, the thief is DJ, yeah.
Yeah. We have Callie Marie Tran as a resistance fighter, and also Laura Dern plays Admiral Holdo. So we have some new characters coming in. Are they as easily to like and be central Star Wars characters as we think of like C-3PO and Chewie and all these other ones?
By interacting with the older characters, you're supposed to accept them for those reasons. But, you know, like when I see Laura Dern, I go, hey, Laura Dern's in a Star Wars movie. You know, I don't really think of her as the character, and the character's never really developed. She does have dramatic beats, and her big beef is with Poe. And so there's a conflict there. But she does something admirable. Rose Tico is, she spends most of the film with John Boyega's character Finn as they attempt to, help the resistance in some way. And meanwhile, Rey is on the island with Luke. And there's a lot of interaction between Rey and Kylo Ren, and it's sort of tell because they're both on the Force. You know, mm-hmm. so the Force plays a role in this as well. It's explained as the things between molecules, and we see various demonstrations of it. One of which is these three characters sort of communicate using the Force.
So it's not limiting that Luke and Rey are on the island of Acto. When all this other stuff is happening elsewhere in the galaxy, it's still integrating.
Wasn't that how the first film was, or the first couple of films were sort of shot? I mean, there would be action sequences, and then there'd be something else, another character development, and then another character development, and then this action scene. That's mm-hmm. how they're cut. The film is cut into scenes reflecting what's going on in those characters at the same time or, you know, peripherally. And so, they cut between the characters. It's not like one long extended scene of Rey on the island. It's Rey, and then it's, Poe, and then so they do cut it into intersplice those scenes, those storylines, and tell the story that way. I mean, it's very common.
With Luke Skywalker having a prominent role, we got a piece of him at the end of The Force Awakens in that he had, 10 seconds on camera or something like that. But now it's fully integrated, the return of Luke Skywalker, so to speak. How did Mark Hamill do with returning and reprising his role?
Oh, he's great. He's got this Batman growl, and he's he's hooded, and he looks worn. He looks like an old Jedi. And, yeah, he's on this remote island. They introduce a few new character creatures, which I'm never a big fan of, that Porg or whatever.
So you don't like the Porg.
I don't like the Porg. I'm sure there'll be in a few stockings this Christmas.
Lots of debates.
Yeah, but it's not as bad. But they interact with Chewie a little bit, too, because they're both critters, I guess. So he's in this, he's a monk-like kind of presence on this isolated island and he doesn't want to interact with Rey or the Resistance. And her getting him to acknowledge her is part of the long build-up to their arc together.
Do we get, if you can vaguely answer this, do we get any answers as to why he secluded himself and went to such great lengths to hide himself from, you know, from his sister, from the resistance?
I wrote that. Yeah, we do. We get a very specific reason, but I'm not going to say what it is. Mm-hmm. But he's become cynical and fed up with the Jedi myth, even though he's like the keeper of the Jedi texts. So he's on this island by himself. He's protecting these texts, yet he's rejecting everything that the texts say. So it's a weird conflict, but, you know.
Yeah. But it works for him.
I don't know if it works. It seems kind of contrived, but it seems very familiar. A hero who's resisting being made into, who maybe it was in Blade Runner as well. I want to hide from everything I've done. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happens with Luke.
Right. Now, with the lead up to The Last Jedi, Mark Hamill himself and even the director Rian Johnson kind of implored fans to not dive too deep into the trailers, into reading any spoilers. You know, they kind of wanted them to remain as clean a slate as possible before seeing this movie.
So that's how I saw it.
Yeah. So do you think that
too
was...
Too bad for you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I suppose, you know, they say, like, ultimately Rian Johnson says the trailers aren't necessarily misleading, but of course, you know, how do you cut over 2 hours of a film into, like, a little... Two and a half, really? Okay. I'm excited now.
Well, it seemed like it. I didn't put a clock on it, but I know when I got in and when I got out.
Right. But to condense, you know, maybe a picture of what's happening into less than 2 minutes in a trailer, you know, do you think with whatever few trailers you saw or any lead up to it, do you think it's misleading? Or do you think it kind of just reveals what it can without...
I haven't avoided the trailers. I'm always excited when they pop up, and I watch them once or twice. But I don't get obsessed. And then I see there's all this analysis, the reviews of the trailers. There probably are YouTube videos analyzing the trailer. I'm sure there are, you know. So yeah. I don't really pay much attention to the trailers. But I'm always excited to see what's what. And the trailer, by nature, exposes some things. That's one reason a lot of people don't like them. They tell too much of the story. Sometimes I'll sit there, and after a 2.5-minute trailer, I go, you know, well, you don't need to see the movie. Obviously, you do for this one. Yeah. I mean, I don't think the trailer spoils anything as much as we did here.
Also hinted in the trailers, of course, different worlds, different planets, in addition to the new characters and creatures. And is there a planet that we're familiar with?
Yeah. Trilogy? We talked about it before the show, and we decided not to mention it.
We won't say the name.
But it's something. There are a number of things familiar from the old series that you welcome. R2 is in it. Chewie's in it. C-3PO is in it. And they, the Millennium Falcon is in it. So there are recurring things from the mythology of Star Wars, planets, characters that appear in this film. Is that vague enough for you?
I think so. That's good. With J.J. Abrams' approach with the first of this trilogy, he used a lot of practical effects, really harkening back to what the original Star Wars methods were, what made it Star Wars for us. Does Rian Johnson have that similar take on it?
Well, there's a lot of physical, tactile stuff, but... You know, there are so many space battles. There's a lot of CGI. I wouldn't venture to guess, but it's a quarter of the film. I mean, that super, you know, space effects of fighters and battleships, and so there's a certain amount of CGI, considerable amount. But there is a tactile aspect, but it's not the overriding feeling. And plus, I saw it in a weird technology. Well, first of all, the clarity was amazing, and I don't know if it shot digitally. I'm sure it shot digitally, probably. But my seat rumbled. My seat vibrated.
Okay.
And there was a ton of that kind of deep sound in the film. So you'd be watching it, and there'd be an explosion, and, you know, your back and butt would feel this rattle. It was weird. I don't know. You stop noticing it after a while, and it was incredibly loud when I saw it. So, but you also stop noticing that as well. But I thought that was a weird effect, and I'm not sure I appreciated being violated that way.
Well, kind of like how you go deaf after watching Dunkirk.
Yeah.
You were fortunate enough to see it earlier this week among the select few. Yeah. So what is that process like? You know, this super secret location, you say, is there a secret password that you have to
get? But they do confiscate your phone. So we had to go to see it in Chicago. There's only four people from the Milwaukee market whose names are, I won't say. And, I drove down for the last one. Of course I will. It's because we belong to a group called the Broadcast Film Critics Association, whose awards are coming up in January. Watch for hurt everyone. And there's, so we're four of the people who are in this group in Milwaukee. And so we get invited to Star Wars in Chicago. So we had to drive. I mean, we didn't go together, but we all went to Chicago and went to a theater in the Loop off Michigan Avenue on Illinois. I think it's an AMC theater. And there's a line of you know, there are a lot of movie press in Illinois, in Chicago, and they're all there. And a lot of them are probably broadcast and radio because they have so many media in Chicago, and probably a lot of bloggers too, for all I know. So there's a pretty large group of 40 or so people, and they confiscate your phone when you go in. And I did go with a buddy from Milwaukee, and we picked our seats and we just sat there and in a perfect place. We sat in the middle of the theater, up halfway up the theater, and there was a little ledge in front of me, and I could put my feet on it if I wanted to. It was the perfect spot. And but we don't really know any of the other people, so we don't interact with them. And everybody is, after the film, just talking among themselves about how they feel about it. But it's, you know, for, I got to say that for 24 hours, I knew something that not a lot of other people knew.
Yes.
And I'm sharing it with you today.
And I appreciate that. But overall, would you give it high markings? Are you going to
Yeah,
see it again?
I'd give it a positive. I would give it a positive. I wouldn't give it an A plus or anything like that. And I could be seen as a B plus, but I'll give it a solid A. Big entertainment value and true to what we already know about what we love. So I'm happy with it.
And does it leave us thirsty for more? Is it a big cliffhanger until
episode
9?
Yeah, there is a cliffhanger, and there's a really great final scene. I mean the last 15 minutes. I actually thought at one point it was going to end at this really dramatic scene. There's some great character battles in this one. You know, everybody gets involved in a physical kind of thing with their lightsabers or other weapons, and it's pretty cool.
Dwayne Dudek is a film critic, UW-Milwaukee film instructor, and a regular Lake Effect contributor. He spoke with Audrey Nowakowski about the latest in the Star Wars series, The Last Jedi.